Under the skin. I'd like to welcome Jen Bernstein to Under the Scales. We're in Princeton, New Jersey right now. Jen was nice enough to come to my hometown to take a pilgrimage and verify the existence of the rhombus. And I was very happy to show Jen around. Jen also, for you Princetonians, knew about Hoagie Haven. So we just finished a Hoagie Haven sandwich as well. How are you, Jen?
It was delicious. It's like, I don't know about hoagies in general, if it's a great stoner food, hoagies, grinders, whatever you call it, sandwiches. It was awesome. Great to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Absolutely. Jen and I were just sort of trying to remember how we first became aware of each other's presence. And while we probably rubbed elbows in the fish crowd, it was really Twitter that sort of solidified our friendship.
Yeah, the Twittersphere is this amazing place where there's so many of the tribe, you know, the fish tribe.
Right.
I've met some of my favorite people online.
Well, you have a very, very active presence, and you tweet, and it's also part of your job, which we'll get into.
Exactly. You know, yeah. Being a professional stoner definitely lends itself to, you know, being online and tweeting and, you know, shouting out hashtag legalize it, or, you know, trying to motivate for the cause. It's all a good thing.
Well, let's start then. Since you brought it up, you already said the word stoner. Jen, I enlisted her aid, and then maybe even you beat me to it. Simultaneously, we kind of realized that the song Blaze On could be an anthem for
the High Times anthem. And at the time I was working at High Times, I figured that this would be like the best song out there, really. I mean, and even for Fish and for you to write such a pro pot song, it was just great. You got your nice shades on and you got one life. Blaze on.
Blaze on. It's funny because nowadays, like, it should be called vape on because no one blazes anymore.
That's true. I mean, there's still a lot. Actually, more Americans prefer smoking weed than vaping. But it is. It's the hugest thing right now. Everything from hashtag vape pen on, you know, and even at High Times. Like, I've taught more people how to use their vape pen for my YouTube videos, like hundreds of thousands of clicks, and people coming up to me at fish shows being like, oh my god, you're that girl, I learned how to load my vape pen or how to clean it from you. And I'm that's me.
I have to rewind you then. The reason that you keep saying High Times, so the famous magazine that started in the 70s.
Yeah, 1974 by Tom Fersaud, who was this rebel renegade, and he was actually a pilot. And he was smuggling all these like bushels of weed into the States, right? So in Florida and different places. And he was making so much money by selling weed, he needed a way to funnel it, right?
Right.
That's kind of like still an issue. It's like, what do you do with all this money from weed? Gotta find a cause. So
everyone buys Persian rugs and stuff.
Yeah, totally. Right. or Beamers or Porsches or Lamborghini. Okay. Well, I don't know, whatever. Not me. My first car when I was a stoner was a Plymouth Voyager van, and my license plate was Forbin.
All right. So, well, so you're not claiming to be a trafficker. You're just a consumer.
So Tom Fersaud, he was flying these planes, needed a place to put his money. And one day he was doing a bunch of nitrous with some friends, and he was like, we need to create a magazine for the high society. And that is how High Times got started. It was in a nitrous stream. Tom Fersaud was like, you know what? This is what we're going to do with our money. So the first run of the magazine was a silver metallic cover. And it had a woman holding a psychedelic mushroom and putting it into her mouth. And I'm gesturing to Tom that I have like a mushroom in my hands and I'm about to eat this. And
it was sort of a suggestive pose, right? Of
yeah,
female, because
definitely.
Didn't it have something to do the first issue with Playboy?
Well, yeah, because it was supposed to be a knockoff. That's why High Times has the centerfold.
Right.
Right? So every issue of High Times magazine, and I'm just showing Tom here an issue, it has a beautiful photo of a bud or a plant.
That is really sexy, yeah.
Right? This is a purple train wreck.
Wow.
And this just happens to be the October issue of 2014, which is my cover story on pot jobs. but enough about that. Yeah, so it was a, you know, a mock of,
yeah,
of Playboy.
And it became a runaway success.
Yeah, so the first print run was like, I don't know, 100,000 issues, and they sold out. You can't get a copy of that now for like under 10 grand on eBay. So it's like a collector's item.
Oh, it's nice of you to bring one. I see you have one for me.
I see, right? I'll even sign it to you.
Yeah.
that actually takes the value down a little bit. but yeah, so High Times, it was and is this, you know, amazing, you know, place to work. It was a dream job. I flew all over the country sampling the best weed in the country.
All right. So now,
as a judge at the Cannabis Cups.
Okay. So the Cannabis Cup is a big thing that High Times writes about. In fact, if you go to hightimes.com now, you see the Cannabis Cup and the results of the Cannabis Cup for years. So people, I'm not as into weed as Jen is, as you guys
I know you smoke that Tangy or the Girl Scout cookies. We talked about this, Tom. Blaze on.
But so that's still a huge thing. And
you
were one
definitely.
Of the judges. So well,
I judged sativas. I judged hybrids.
But
I was never
how does
real.
That work? Like, so if you're tasting wine, you have to spit it out, right? So you don't get drunk. How do you judge weed? That's the way you judge it, right? By how stoned or the type of stoned you get?
So we judged on like out of five, and it was taste, aroma, visual appearance, burn flush, which, you know, is about how I would roll a joint and how it burns. And you want it to burn so it has a white ash, and it should be able to flake off your joint.
Gosh. Wow.
And the reason why you should do that is it burns well, right?
But isn't that a function of the roller, not of the weed
it is,
itself?
It is, part of it.
Okay.
But then the flush. So this is really important because the flush is talking about the nutrients that the grower has added to the plant. And in its final stage of flowering, and before you harvest, you want to flush the plant.
Oh.
So you're getting rid of those nutrients because you don't want to be smoking chemicals.
Oh.
Right?
Right. So you can tell by the way that it burns
whether it's
still
like a dark
over-fertilized.
Ash. Yeah.
Interesting.
Kind of nasty, right?
Does that affect the taste too?
Uh-huh.
Huh. Okay. Wow.
So, yeah. So, I mean,
how long would you have to wait after sampling one before you're able
to
judge?
So this is kind of like the big question, right? Because you're high for a week at least. Like for me, it took me a week to judge all of my strains.
Okay.
So I have a week.
So you're admitting that you do take some time between them to actually be able to assess.
The longest I could go was 4 hours in a day without smoking another sample because I had like up to 30 samples.
Oh my God.
And I only had like, you know, really 5 days.
Wouldn't
before
it just
I had
make
to get
you...
the scores in.
Now here's, okay. So I guess you get to a certain level of smoking pot, like some advanced level that I can't even conceive of because I'm at the bottom of that stairway still.
<chain. laughs>
Yeah. If you try to draw the analogy between alcohol, you would just get fall down staggeringly, stupidly drunk, and you'd be useless. That doesn't happen with pot?
Well, I mean, for us, canisaurs.
Okay. Canisaurs.
Got it. for us, I know what my, you know, how high I can get before I don't function anymore. And with edibles, I know that's like 25 milligrams. For me, it's like maybe a certain number of dabs at a, you know, concentrates have, it's a concentrated form of THC. So I'm only going to do like one or two dabs. There's people who dab all day long.
Wow.
That's all they do.
Wow.
But their tolerance is also higher. Like you could probably drink like six beers and I wouldn't wake up until tomorrow or I'd be sick because I just don't drink that much.
Okay, right.
I'm I don't mix like weed and alcohol. I'm kind of a purist that way.
Interesting. Okay. Maybe that's one of my issues is because I don't think I've ever not combined it with beer.
I just get sick. I drink a lot and then I try to smoke, I turn green and spinny.
Because sort of my experiences where, and I was telling you, the times I've enjoyed it the most have when I've not been in a public kind of arena.
Mm-hmm.
And
because you tend to get antisocial or,
or
inside your head.
Possibly, yeah. My head starts playing tricks on me. And if I'm, you know, home or with some close friends and we're doing something familiar, then I'm better off. But in any case, the times I've had the best time is when I've had a little base of alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes me more comfortable. So I think for that reason, I've always, but maybe to be a true connoisseur,
I have to. Experiment. Maybe we should try. We should figure it out. But we were also talking in the car before about maybe there's different strains that are better for you than others. Like
yeah.
If a sativa is a little bit more of an upper and you tend to bust out of that shell a little bit more and become more social, then
right.
Yeah. So
is the indica the opiate, the pain reliever
yeah, so
one?
The indica is kind of, it comes from the Hindu Kush mountains, right? Originally.
Okay.
And it has kind of like that couch lock effect that
yes.
you just kind of like want to sit on your couch and eat a bag of potato chips
right.
and call it a day, which is great. And it's also really useful as a medication for, all different types of pain relief.
Okay.
And now, part of these studies are showing that, cannabis is a great medicine for helping people get off of opiates.
Now, is that when they breed out the THC and focus on the CBD or whatever?
Well,
or
CBD is definitely more of the healing effects. I believe in the entourage effect, which is that you have to have THC and CBD.
They both have beneficial health effects?
Yeah, to combine. Well, THC gives you the psychoactive events. That's effects,
okay.
Right? So the psychoactive effects help you. Those are your high. That's the high feeling that you get from it.
Right.
Now, the CBDs are more responsible for, you're not going to really feel it, but it's the healing effects.
To make it mainstream, take it more seriously, would it be better if the CBD were emphasized? In other words,
well, some states have solely CBD laws, right?
Okay.
So Florida is
okay.
one. And it's definitely better when states, if you're looking at legalization, have some type of medical program first to start.
Okay.
Because it always comes down to the patients. This is a miracle plant. It does wondrous things for people. It really helps with healing. And yeah, so it does make sense to have a CBD only or some type of program that allows for both. Because as I said before, we have an endocannabinoid system. And to have these binding effects when the cannabinoids like enter our bloodstream, the THC, the CBD, I really feel that you need both. And these are only two of the many different cannabinoids that we know about
right.
in the plant. There's hundreds.
Is the primary healing that occurs, and I'm saying healing, not in finger quotes, but just not actual healing happening, like curing, but more, I don't want to say masking, but do you know what I'm asking? Like, so
it's not masking because there are studies that have shown in please don't quote this because I don't have the studies in front of me. And also because we are talking about a federally regulated drug. It's a Schedule I drug, meaning that it has no medical benefits, which is completely wrong. And
right.
we've been in this big fight to push for it.
That's what the fight's about.
Yeah. To
Well, the fight's also.
Because it does have plenty of medical benefits.
The fight's also to decriminalize a drug.
Right. Just a
recreational drug.
It's a plant. It's a non-toxic
No, but I'm saying the
plant.
Fight's happening on two levels. One is to say, hey, this is very medically valuable. The other is to say, dude, it's no worse than alcohol, and it's fun, and it shouldn't be.
Marijuana is safer than alcohol.
I don't know. Anyone that's gotten stoned and gotten into a fight, it doesn't make you violent. Maybe it makes you want Oreos.
Well, yes. I mean, so that's part of the joke, right?
Right.
I mean, the reality is that it's a peaceful drug.
Yes.
And it doesn't promote violence in any way,
right.
You know, whereas like alcohol, you kind of get like rowdy and you start peeing on things, you know?
Right.
No, I don't know. Like it's definitely, a healing plant.
But that's
and
what, but
it's
to
a
me,
female plant too.
It's a
right?
what plant?
It's a female plant. It's,
the ones that get you stoned are female.
Mm-hmm.
But why?
Well, because,
why does that matter?
It flowers. And it's a flowering plant and it's a female plant.
But does,
so
does
women
that have special...
are naturally,
ah,
I think, a little bit less, I don't know, violent.
Oh, okay. I see that
you're smoking a female plant. You're ingesting a female plant. And I know that one of the things that have interested you about the cannabis industry also is that, you know, it's an industry, it's the first industry to be led by women.
Ah, okay. I didn't know this women's side of the pot industry. That's pretty interesting. So you're saying that some of these businesses that are now thriving have women right at the very top.
Yep, right at the very top. So
that's cool.
I mean, there's all types of new organizations that are out there, but it's something like 33% of women who are in this industry hold some type of management position, which is far higher than
if you look at other industries,
as well. And the cannabis industry is going to be like a $20 billion industry by 2020. That's huge.
Wow.
It's the first industry to be headed by women because, well, who knows? It's not just because it's a female plant, but it's the first industry to really get its start from now. What new industries have just taken hold, I don't know, in the last century that's entirely new? Well, I'll tell you a few. Craft beer.
Craft beer.
Okay.
Virtual reality.
VR. And I know that cannabis, in terms of sales, will have already surpassed the sales of craft beer and the organic food industry. Think about that. There's more in cannabis sales than there are organic foods. So if you want to talk about legalizing it, and if you want to talk about making money for your state, and you want to talk about a program like New York, which I just joined as a patient, and the fact that I only have a few options of the way that I can ingest cannabis, and none of the way are the way that I want to, you know, I want to smoke, but we only have vaping. You can take it as a tincture, you can take it as a pill.
Right.
I want to smoke, you know, that's like, I'm used to taking bong hits. I'm used to rolling joints. I'm used to hitting a bowl. Like, this is, you know, I really want to change this program.
Right. Indulge me for a second, though. I'm wondering if it's hurting or helping the fight to sort of overall legalize it, that it's being fought on two levels. The recreational side and the medical side. Are they, they're hand in hand, mm-hmm. but are they, is one hindering the other?
I guess so. I mean, I guess what I want to say.
What are you up against, I guess?
I guess what we're up against is that we haven't been able to do the research. Up until, I don't know, a few months ago,
funding. It's a funding thing.
Not only funding, it was against the law. It's illegal to study cannabis up until a few months ago. So now that we can finally study the plant and prove its efficacy, then
it's because of the Schedule One.
That's part of it. But now it was just recently decided that we can study the drug.
Okay, well, that's good.
So, I mean, but look.
So that's an example of the recreational side hindering the medical side.
Sure.
Right? Well, because it got listed as Schedule One.
But it still remains that what about life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? It is my God-given right to smoke if I want to smoke or ingest cannabis in any form that I want to. It's also my right to grow it. And I think that for stoners, and I use that in a loving term, not as a, you know, a derogatory, that it's our right.
Is it your right to take opiates?
Sure. I mean, if you want to get into, you know,
I mean, how do you say it's a God-given
right?
Well,
because it is a non-toxic plant. It's a healing plant, and that it's, as you've said, like, it's not violent.
Right.
It doesn't cause violence.
I'm thinking of a tiny little opium poppy growing innocently somewhere in Afghanistan.
Definitely.
But look at the havoc that's caused. And so the anti-marijuana industry is probably saying the same thing. Like, hey, look what you're going to let out of the bottle.
But what about alcohol?
Oh my gosh. Well, that's already out of the bottle.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the whole fact is that Amendment 64 in Colorado was passed because of this guerrilla campaign led by Mason Tvert that said that marijuana is safer than alcohol. And Governor Hickenlooper of Colorado is one of the largest owners of breweries in Colorado.
Okay.
So it was like, hello, kettle. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
How can you say that
I see.
One is better than the, you know, it's like.
Well, that's why. That's how you can say
weed
it.
Is.
When you're worried about your profits being eaten into or something. I got you. I got it. Well, now back to Jen as a fish fan. Which came first for you, fish or pot?
Oh, well, actually, they both came at the same time. I mean, it was...
inseparable for you?
Ah, isn't that a beautiful thing? The sounds hippies here, isn't that a thing? I started smoking pot at 16, and that was also the same year that I saw my first show. So 10/26/96, Charlotte Coliseum. Uh-huh. It was a great, awesome show.
Remember a particular song from that?
Well, the third song was like McGrupp.
All right. Let's hear it right now.
I've altered my meager flock to the shores of the Baltic Sea. The teeth of time have stole the rhyme of how things should be. My cave, my house, my turning wheel, my little docking cup. The march of Colonel Forbin and his fleet hound called McGrupp.
I've alternated. No. yeah. So, I mean, these are songs that have like influenced me. Like, I really don't think that I would have ended up at High Times without smoking weed or without listening to Fish is what I'm saying. Like,
gotcha.
I pretty much got there because I was into, you know, subculture, and
right.
Fish has its own little subculture. So many
it really does.
Different aspects, right?
Going we were just on. Talking about it at the Rhombus.
Yeah, like Gamehenge itself.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's in itself its own like
yes.
little microcosm.
So Fish constantly rewarded people that got into Fish with not only musically would you be rewarded by sort of going to different shows because every single concert is different, but every version of the song is different, and yet, and then you'd study it and listen to those words, and they would take you to a place. And then for people who got really deep into it, you realize there's like this religion following Fish around,
yeah.
this Gamehenge thing.
Well,
and that
I mean,
was incredible.
The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday. I mean, it really starts off by you sending Trey these lyrics, right, and putting.
Well, that that song we just heard was he got a lot of the characters for Gamehenge and The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday from that. I, however, was like working on my computer science career, not realizing what I had unleashed, thankfully.
But what about Wilson then?
And Wilson, yep, that came from Princeton Day School as well. Our good friend Aaron Wolf and I wrote that. And then Aaron, of course, became Aaron Wolf in the saga.
Right.
And yeah, so between... Wilson and McGrupp, and then this story I wrote, Trey, called Farley Warp, which had the character the sloth in it. Between those three things, I think I almost named everyone.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so, how does the Rhombus play into all of this? I know we were just there, and
Trey wrote it in just simply as the portal between this world and the Gamehenge world. But I guess he was paying tribute to the fact that he and I, along with our good friends Mark Daubert, David Abrahams, and occasionally Peter Cotone and Roger Holloway, would write songs there. And it was just such a... You said you felt it. It emanates.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
it's a crazy energy, right?
Yeah.
So Tom lifts me up, basically. I had to climb up there. I tried to get up there on my own, but no, he gave me a nice little leg up, and I laid down. And if you bang on it, and you were telling me that you and Trey and the guys used to sit there and pound on it.
Yeah, yeah. You could do this. You could get sort of a resonance going if you... And you could actually, we would get to the point where our hands were so torn up by the end of the night just because we sit there pounding
on
it
for hours.
But yeah, you could get a resonance going. There's like, it has like its own internal rhythm. So we get it started and then you start hearing the wave resonance. And when you're laying on your back on it, you feel that it's projecting up into the sky. And
it's pretty incredible.
It's mystical, magical, and amazing. And I was telling you that one night, And unfortunately now the rhombus has been relocated. So I don't think
somebody moved the rhombus.
They moved it from the backyard to the front yard.
Yeah, it's in the front yard.
I don't know if this could ever happen again, but on a particular foggy night, we went and on a wet night, you can't get up on the rhombus. So this probably, the fog probably rolled in after we were on it. And one of the lights for this incredible tower right nearby the rhombus was broken. So only half of the tower was illuminated, and the entire sky, there was a dividing line that went right above us at the rhombus. One side was light. It was like light mist and fog, and the other was just pitch black. And so we were saying divided sky, the wind blows over
incredible.
And over. We probably said it, 100 times.
Right. So meanwhile, you're laying on the rhombus, you're looking up, and there's a light, right?
Yeah. And thumping our hands.
And
yeah.
That's how you get divided sky.
That is.
Pretty incredible. What other songs were written?
Now I'm being interviewed, which is good. I like it. This foreshadows, I'm going to do an interview with you, I hope, soon with High Times.
Coming up in High Times, we're going to have Tom Marshall in the entertainment section.
Other songs that actually possibly made it into the Phish canon, I can only come up with one, and it's something that has been played just very, as a joke, which was Guy Forget. I never met a man that I could not forget except for Guy Forget.
Can we play a little bit of it?
I wish we had it. Well, yeah, I can play the Phish version. Here we go. Guy Forget, I never met a man that I could not forget except for Guy Forget, I never met a man that I could not forget except for Guy Forget. Awesome. Wow, that brings back the memories.
Right? All from the rhombus. And now, and if you come to Princeton, right? I mean, anybody can go to probably where most of the smart people in the country are holed up.
So what Jen is referring to is it's on the grounds of something called the Institute for Advanced Study, which is, I was telling her, it's not really a landmark in Princeton. They don't really super advertise it or want tourists there. It's a quiet, reclusive campus, and it's for extremely smart people that I believe, I'm not sure they apply for grants, or it's more like they get tapped. They get recognized that they're in some field of research, and then the Institute for Advanced Study, I could be completely wrong about this, but this was my impression, say you're a luminary in the field of robotics, all of a sudden you'll get a call from them and they'll say, hey, do you want a $200,000 salary and a $1 million budget and an office and a house to continue your research? And what 22-year-old kid would say no to that? You know what I mean? So it's filled with, and of course, the history of the place is that's where Einstein and Oppenheimer and other people did the final work on coming up with the atomic bomb.
Wow. Yeah. And then there's Tom and I just strolling through and I'm hitting my vape pen and trying to find kids who I can influence. And we're just like climbing up this amazing, enormous black structure.
Well, there's other avenues of intelligence. we're probably less destructive ultimately than Einstein was. Oh,
there you go. I bet he loved alcohol.
Oh, there you go.
Big beer drinker.
So, High Times. So, I understand you recently left, but were you the head honcho there for a while?
I was number two. I was managing editor of the publication, and I wrote some cover stories, including the vape pen review, which I, through Twitter would get some of my favorite friends to come and test like over 100 vape pens in 2 days, right?
Oh my God, wow.
And try to keep that organized.
Now, are vape pens, forgive me for not knowing this, but aren't they those throwaway things that, someone passes you?
Some are like rechargeable. And the ones that I primarily have, and I'm going to share with you later, are rechargeable, and they're not throwaway, but some you can get the cartridges for, and those have like cannabis, some type of concentrate in there.
Okay. There was something that my friend legally, I should add, brought from Colorado. Well, I don't know if the bringing part is legal, but I think he said that, you know, this has 100 hits, it's $40, and it's toss it when it's done kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really easy, and that's why it's great for everybody, from soccer moms to it's just such an easy way to...
Smoke on a plane.
You don't want to smoke on a plane. That's, you can still, even though I did write this one article for on HighTimes.com about best places I've gotten high with a vape pen.
And don't say in the
there's
bathroom.
Many, many in the plane, like just sitting in their seat, like blowing it, you know, under their shirt.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a vapor, so it disperses really quickly.
Well, on the way,
and it's not smoke, which will
We'll
set off
an
alarm, but I don't want
you're not telling
going
people
into,
into the bathroom
to go try to see if your vape will set it off, because
it might.
I do know people, shout out Wiener, who have gotten in trouble and almost kicked off planes.
Well, that's also a federal crime, right? That's what they say.
Yeah. Let's just not try that one at home, kids.
So when you go and check out...
But at a fish show, definitely. And, you know, I'll give you a tip for Madison Square Garden, since... you'll be walking in with your metal vape pen and you don't want to set off the, you know, the beepers or whatever.
Right.
You get a little, for men, you guys get this little tray and you put your wallet in there. If you just throw it in with your cell phone, your wallet, whatever, your change, and that goes around the, you know, the metal detector.
Right.
So it won't go off.
They don't look at it? They don't care about it?
Not really. Or just like stick it in your wallet and fold your wallet back over.
Well, now, are you talking about these little slender pen things, or are you talking about those apparatuses
talking about the big like mod boxes.
Okay,
I'm talking about like a Puffco Pro.
You toss that right on the tray and no one will care.
Yeah. They're not really looking for that.
You heard it from Jen. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, cool.
Just nobody tell security that I'm telling you this.
No, you heard it from anyone but Jen Bernstein.
That's right.
You know, I used to check out High Times. And I would like, and I don't think it was the centerfold part. I think it was the back of the magazine where it was like 100 things to do.
Yeah, the
whatever.
Hemp 100.
Yeah.
Or most That's recently it. We have the Pot 40, which Fish has been in, I don't know, any number
because of your
times.
Your recommendation?
Oh, yeah. Well, because I would, let's just see if there's any in this one. I wrote it with, along with my coworker, Mike Hughes, and Cosmo's the same artist who's been writing it for the same. But yeah, we definitely put Blaze On in there multiple times. And
as something to listen to while stoned? Or just something that's helping the movement?
Yeah, everything from helping the movement to, I mean, it's an anthem. Again, it's just like words to live by.
Thank you. I agree. I totally agree. I think Trey and I found it, you know, funny, and I was kind of happy that he was supporting it as well.
Definitely.
You know, So
I mean, there's so many, you know, great reasons, but
and
to have Trey behind it as well is...
Yeah.
It's
and
nice.
No matter what you personally do, you can also be for legalization.
Right. And I have to tell you, like, the Blaze On this year at Dick's was, you know, it just felt really good. You know, I definitely appreciated hearing it in a legal state.
It
and
became
knowing,
your anthem?
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Now, I also, when I went back into, sort of before you showed up today, and yesterday I was thinking about, like, High Times used to be one of those things in the magazine rack that you'd grab and try to look before they make you pay for it, right? but I remember, like, Jerry Garcia, Willie Nelson,
great covers.
Bob Marley.
Bob Marley.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was wondering if any of our Fish pals ever made it on or in.
Well, Mike Gordon won a Stony Award a few years back, and he actually received the Smokable Award, which is a bong. I mean, it's a Stony, so he came to the award ceremony, and I remember Steve Bloom did an interview with him in the magazine, and it was asking him about, like, did you know that... outside in, had all these different drug references, like it's 4:20 on the clock at one point.
Wow.
And you say something about like a G13 cord. I don't know what it was. And those are both, you know,
types of
references.
Pot,
or, well, 4:20 being the official stoner time.
What time is it now,
up.
By the way? Oh, okay.
I don't know,
only 3:10. It's 4:20
someplace, Tom.
I don't think so. It's 4:10 somewhere, maybe.
So he was asked about that. So that's pretty cool. And then also, I wrote about the flood recovery benefit when, I guess that was a few years ago, too. I went up to Vermont, and Governor Sumlin spoke at the show, and Fish was doing a benefit after.
Okay.
Was it one of the hurricanes, or there's a huge.
Yeah, Irene kind of settled over Vermont and caused havoc up there, washed away roads and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was awful. And then Fish, of course, you know, being the great guys that they are, did a huge benefit for the state.
Okay, but Mike, going back to him and receiving a smokable award, he's not a substance guy. I mean, I don't know Mike super, super well, but I think I've only ever seen him sip a beer, you know?
I can't even say that I've seen him do that.
Well, okay, exactly. So maybe here's something amazing that happened. So Mike, at least to me, I think it was one of those times in the late 90s, I was on the bus with the band, and Mike had taken to jumping in a golf cart and visiting people in the audience.
Yeah, that's his thing.
Driving around. Yeah, this
Mike's
was kind of when he started
that.
Band
friendly. Yeah. It's so great when you see him in the lot driving around.
Yeah, so, but he also had been known to me on the bus anyway, and I think Fishman then was also kind of as being really worried about what he ate and what he put into his body. And so this thing happened that just, it really kind of shocked me. So Mike, I was standing in the lot with some friends, and Mike pulled up on the golf cart, and we started talking. And then immediately a guy, extremely unclean gentleman, walked up to us and handed on a very dirty hand, a goo ball to Mike.
Oh.
And I said to Mike, I'll give you $500 if you eat that, knowing he wouldn't put it anywhere near his mouth. And he grabbed it and started eating it to make me pay him money.
Nice.
Fortunately,
way to go, Mike.
Yeah. Fortunately, for the bet, he spat it out. Like, he spat it into his hand.
Oh.
But he was definitely had me
worried. How high was he for the show?
Exactly. I think maybe he was thinking that as well.
Yeah. I think, and you know, props to Mike for like being able to do this, but like, he's talked about those levels of intense deepness, those dreamlike states that he tries to get to, where which is like induced with music, and it's like that bridge between the dream state and playing music,
right?
That I think somebody like him doesn't need drugs to get into that space,
right?
Or maybe would even hinder. I don't know, but I find it really amazing that these guys don't smoke more pot than they do, because it, for me, like, on a consumer and consuming level, like, it just makes everything about Fish that much better.
It makes you, like, able to appreciate it. Well, you're down, like, with my friend Derek, who I interviewed earlier.
Right.
You're down at the front row,
I like
often.
I like to be, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 feet back, usually in between Trey and Mike.
Okay.
I try to find that sweet spot for me, where I can see both of them. But as a bass player myself, like, I like to watch Mike and see what he's doing. I just think it's all really cool. And I also want to feel the bass.
Ah.
So even at 15 feet back, and he'll tell you that I'm not getting the same vibrations that he's getting. He's got this really cool rumble pad in front of his bass, so he can feel in front of his speaker stack.
But you mean between him and the audience?
That he stands on, not between him and the audience. Oh, I've begged for my own personal rumble pad, but
that'd be like a tarp squared.
Yes. Oh my god,
tarp cube.
Let's get on that. Who can we talk to? Dickie, help us. Your only chance.
I want a rumble pad. So more things on the High Times webpage. So, of course, you teach people and talk about growing. That's a big thing.
Oh, that's huge. And I mean, and that's one of the things that I find as a new patient in New York State. The fact that I can't grow my own medicine, I've worked at High Times for 5 years now, copy editing and inserting changes. I read an issue of the magazine 3 times before it goes out, that I know how to grow. So just give me a chance to grow my own medicine.
Right.
I mean, how beautiful is that?
Right, right. And again, the medicine versus recreational, I wonder what the ratio is there.
I mean, for me as an IBD patient, and I was recently sick and in a flare-up, and I take pharmaceuticals, which didn't help me. Cannabis was the only thing to help me with the nausea, the running to the bathroom, my stomach issues. It instantly, like...
So that's a case of not masking, but healing. That's healing to me.
I mean...
That's amazing.
It stopped.
Okay. Wow. Wow.
And like, I had to come out to my parents who were in town for my...
If you started smoking weed at 16, your parents knew you were smoking weed.
I guess. And if you were working at High Times too.
Yeah, you think?
But I was like, Mom, I'm just going to do this bong hit real...
Mom, know. It's about people feeling really good, but it has nothing to do with...
But it helps. It helps. You know, it really does.
And then edibles. Now, that's a big part of the magazine, the website, but it's also a big part of how it's consumed, right?
Yeah, right now, I mean, MIPS, medically infused products in the legal states are, I think, on pace with the amount of flowers that are sold. So one of the things that I would write about for High Times was pot jobs and how to get a job in the industry.
Right.
And becoming... not so much a chef, but somebody who could create these medically infused products. It's really a great place to put your money if you're looking to invest.
Right.
Or, you know, having, you know, creating these products and having a kitchen.
Okay. Now, I was looking like at the current issue, or actually the current webpage, mm-hmm. and there are all these donuts, and like some of them have 10 milligrams. So that's like that's not going to get you too crazy. But then there's one donut that was like 240.
So the rule with edibles is you take a bite of that donut.
Of the 10? Or of any edible?
Say the 240 of any edible.
Okay.
You take a bite and then you see how you're doing.
Okay.
Sometimes you have to wait up to 4 hours to feel the effects.
Right.
And why is that? Because everybody has different metabolism. You metabolize at a different rate than
I
do.
You might have food in your stomach, or
your
stomach might be empty.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And so you always want to see what the effects are before you consume more.
Right. I've had friends whose shows were entirely ruined by, you know, eating an entire brownie because they were hungry.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we would have people come to Cannabis Cups and, you know, just go around from booth to booth and sample all the different things, because you're like in... weed Disneyland. You want to try everything. You want to enjoy the ride. But sometimes if you take too much, it's
definitely... I imagine those first aid tents are just filled with beds and Doritos.
I've been known to waste a friend or two.
So now you touched on the business side of things these days. How's Trump going to affect all that?
Well, let's hope that that he'll probably take the same stance that Hillary was going to, which is let the states decide.
Right. Obama kind of just like let dispensaries in California know, I'm not going to come after you at a federal level.
That's what he said. But in the end, it wasn't actually true. There were a lot of federal raids.
Oh.
I can't really get into it so much because I'm sure there were reasons why.
Okay.
Either they were involved in trafficking.
It could have been an interstate kind of commerce problem or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Okay.
But so some were. But one of the best things our President Obama has done is that he's pardoned and, you know, a lot of nonviolent drug offenders.
Yes.
I think that number is up to 250 now.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, hopefully those people won't get put in jail in the first place.
Exactly. So let's just legalize it for everyone.
Yes. Yeah.
And then we won't have a problem. But, you know, regarding Trump, I think, you know, people just need to be vocal about it. And it's really hard to say no to the money that's collected from the state in taxes.
Right, right.
When there's a 30% tax on, you know, any of these things, it's like once you see that money go away, there's going to be some problems. A lot of that tax money goes to education. It
goes
to roads and
infrastructure. That's why some people don't even want to start it, because they know once they start, they can't turn off a tax source.
Great, but this is a good thing.
That's
right?
A good thing for us. Yeah. So, how are you going to now, Jen, continue your advocacy now that you're not at the throne of High Times anymore?
Well, I'm still working with them, still writing for them, still writing for freelancing for a bunch of different companies. I just wrote a piece on thefreshtoast.com, which is a new Seattle startup. But really, I think just being an activist and, getting the word out to people like you. And believe me, Tom, I'm not going anywhere. You can find me on Twitter at NYCJamGal. That's NYCJAMGAL. And really, if you go on to Facebook, just look for Jen Bernstein. I'm going to create a page that will have all of my cannabis consulting.
Right.
So I'll kind of just be a little bit under this, under the radar,
under
I guess.
Under
the scales. Love it.
Yeah. And you are one of the reasons you're taking a little time off is because you're a new mom. So congratulations.
I am a new mom. Yeah, that's great. I mean, I brought my baby to Magna Ball and, well, she was in utero. So does that count? I think she saw 7 shows in utero.
Wow. So she might not have seen them.
Actually. She might not have seen them, but actually her first show was Friday Night of Dicks this year.
Okay.
And she got that really, I think, one of the best versions of No Man in No Man's Land.
Ah, yes.
It was so incredibly funky. And I remember walking away from the rail. She had her disco headphones on, and it was this amazing groove.
That might be a good way to end the interview, Jen.
Thanks so much.
I've kept you very, very
long. I could talk forever. Thanks so much, Tom. And thanks for Gamehenge. Thanks for everything.
You're so welcome. So again, Gamehenge is one of those, like, I'm 1% and Trey's 99%. But I was so glad to be around, and able to watch it happen and be a part of a catalyst to get that going, which is amazing.
Well, couldn't have done it without you, so.
Well, that's nice of you to say. And then the rhombus also.
Oh, the rhombus. Yeah. I guess that's why we're here. We're just drawn to it.
Those of you who visit the rhombus, and you should go there and write music and everything, but be nice to it. Treat it well, and it'll treat you well.
And we'll post some videos on, Tom's Facebook page, Under the Scales, about our trip there today.
Yep. Don't write anything on it. They just restored it. It's beautiful. Leave it black and beautiful.
Respect.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jen. And we'll be seeing you at New Year's.
Thanks. And blaze on.
All right. Blaze on.
You got your nice shades on. And the worst days are gone. So now the band plays on. You got one life. Blaze on. You got your nice shades on. And the worst days are gone.
Thanks for listening to Under the Scales, the podcast about fish fans, their culture, and secrets, if we're lucky. Quick thank you to my producer, Mark Dowd, and my sister podcast, HF Pod. Some of the music you hear in my show is, of course, Fish, but also it's often my old band, Amphibian, with an F. Using songs Anthony Cries on and I wrote for our album, Skip the Goodbyes. Find him at njrecordingstudio.com. I'll interview you if you want as well. Go to underthescales.com and click the Tell Your Story button. If you're at all serious, your submission will definitely get to me. For other matters, write to me at tom@underthescales.com and follow our Twitter here at underthescales. See you next week.